hands it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorofeev, one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin. Score! Noah Hanifin. Power goal.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here. Ryan Wallace and Chris Chapman with you. The VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. And it's hour number two, Chapman. What are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
Oh, you did the radio voice thing again. Well done, buddy. It's not as awkward as it was the first time, or maybe I'm just becoming a little bit more used to it, but let's get into the meat and potatoes of this segment. We're bringing in Director of Entertainment Experience for the Vegas Golden Knights, Tyler Ferraro. Tyler, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How are you guys?
You know, we're well. Obviously, it's going to be a long summer.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes that's nice because you get to, like, recharge, cool your jets, win awards in your case. So you won an Emmy. Like, kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, pretty much the whole team won an Emmy, which is really, really cool. There have been a couple people on our team that have won Emmys in the past for stuff they've done with the Vegas Golden Knights, but it's usually been kind of through, like, Scripps Sports or in the past AT&T Sports, something like that. But this one specifically was completely driven by our entertainment production team. It was fully executed by us and our squad, and pretty much everyone was awarded one and our one this past weekend. So it's been a really special time for our squad, and we're super excited about it. And me personally, like, it's my first ever Emmy, so that's really, really insane. I remember holding my uncle's Emmys that he has when I was like 8 or 10 or something like that, thinking like how cool this would be to have, and lo and behold, here we go. So it was for the banner raising ceremony on opening night this past season, and I think that's what's super special about it, is that it was just the most probably important thing we'll ever do for the Vegas Golden Knights. I think, like, having to raise a championship banner for the first time is a monumental moment, something that I think everyone will remember, and for us to be recognized for it is just, you know, it's an extremely great honor. So it's awesome.
So kind of walk us through the creative process for that production in general, right? Because as you mentioned, it's for raising a banner. It is for recognizing the accomplishments of the organization on the ice in achieving what every player in the league dreams to do, and that's win a Stanley Cup. So you had to capture that in a unique Vegas way, and then to be honored for it a year later is really awesome. But, like, what went into the creative in terms of Raise the Banner, the program that you guys won an Emmy for?
Yeah, it actually started during the playoff run. I think, like, we advanced into the Western Conference Final, and I remember talking to our VP, Andrew, and he goes, "Hey, you know, we can't talk about it too much, but if we go all the way, like, we should do, like, a slot machine banner box or something." I go, "Yeah, that sounds cool." And he goes, "Wow. Okay, we're not going to talk about it anymore." I'm like, that was it. And then we won, and we go, "Holy cow, we're going to do a banner box, and everything is great." We looked at what a lot of other teams have done in the past, and it's usually just, like, a little LED box, and that's kind of it. We obviously wanted to go big and you know, honor Vegas as best as we can. So we all kind of really dug into the banner box idea. And, you know, we thought, how cool would it be if Mark Stone pulls the lever and the screens go and they go Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup, and that's how the banner raises. And that was what we started with. And then we just kind of had to build out around it. We talked a lot about how cool it is that our team is so young. So how do we encapsulate that whole situation as well? Because, you know, if a team like Toronto or something were to win the Cup. They have years and years of history. They can't really talk about it. But with us, you could kind of see throughout our set 6 years, you know, this player got traded to us. We added this player, and we added this coach, and all these little things added up to where we got to now. So we wanted to create a video of that and kind of show our quick history on everything that we've been through as a team and the fans have been through and experienced, because they've experienced a lot in a very, very short amount of time that a lot of teams don't get to experience. So we wanted to kind of show, hey, this is how crazy this is. These are the guys that we drafted at the expansion draft before we even played a game, and here they are on the ice today hoisting the Stanley Cup. Like, how cool is that to kind of see that flow of time happen? So our team created a phenomenal video for that, and then we knew we wanted to have Mark Stone come out of the helmet with the Stanley Cup, because we just think that visual is insane. And obviously that helmet is a massive part of our show. And the best thing that I ever did was for Bruce, our PA announcer, I had to write to Bruce to say, before we raise our banner, will the team please approach the slot machine and place the Stanley Cup on the table next to it, which is the most outlandish line I could have ever written. But for Vegas, it just works. And it's super, super cool. And we just really wanted to honor the city, honor the team from beginning to now. And the fact that we got honored for it now is beyond anything. It's amazing.
So I'm glad you mentioned Mark Stone being part of all of this, because I always wondered from the day that you guys did it, like, how involved was Mark in the process? Like, what was he like during the process? And when you approached him and told him, hey, man, you're going to pull the lever on this slot machine, what was his reaction like?
Well, we never actually said, like, I never, like, went to Mark and said, hey, this is exactly what you're going to do. We talked to a couple of our people on our staff, and they kind of walked him through it. And we just kind of said, hey, look, we just need him to skate out with the cup, do a lap, place it on the table, and then pull a slot machine, pull a lever. And, you know, he's down for it. Mark Stone's a great guy, and he's excited for it. And he had a great attitude about it. I think he got a little bit confused on which side the lever was on. For me, it felt like a five-minute pause because it was so intense. But when you go back and watch it, it looked like a two-second pause. It's just like, which side? Oh, this side. He nailed it. He killed it. He did exactly what he needed to do. And I think the team really liked it. Obviously, it was such a unique way to do a banner raising. It was awesome.
Tyler Ferraro joining us here, the director of entertainment experience for the Vegas Golden Knights. We're talking about an organizational win, an Emmy for Raise the Banner. It was the production of the Golden Knights raising the banner opening night last season to signify their first ever Stanley Cup championship. When it comes to introducing those elements, right? Like, you've got the lever, you've got the slot machine. Like, I'm sure as much of this stuff can be automated as possible, but like, how many dry runs did you do or rehearsals did you do to make sure that everything was ready to go for that moment? Because it's a huge spot. The entire hockey world is on you.
Yeah.
How difficult was that process to make sure that everything was going to go off as smoothly as it could?
Honestly, it wasn't that it was difficult. It was, because we've done some pretty insane things on ice. It was just, we just knew how important it was. And we were like, we have no room for any sort of mishap or mistake, right? We had to honor and respect it so much. We kind of rehearsed it in parts. So the night before, we rehearsed the banner specifically coming out of the box, and we timed that. Then the day of, we rehearsed bringing the banner box on and off and timing out how much it needed to work. And all the crazy, there's so many crazy, intricate details that are a part of it. But I don't think, like I said, we rehearsed it in different parts. And I think the first time we ran through the whole thing start to finish with all of the cues of everyone involved was when we did it live. Now that doesn't mean that we hadn't rehearsed all the other parts. We just had to rehearse it in different sections. But that night we did it was pretty much the first time we incorporated every single element all at the same time with all the different cues and everything. And the craziest part is Stone pulling the lever is actually, I think, that's one of my favorite moments in all of my history with the organization, because there's, I think, five different separate cues happening all at the same time. So Stone pulls the lever. Mm-hmm. When Stone pulls the lever, Andrew actually presses play on the screens to start rotating them. But at the same time, Joe Green, our DJ, has to play the sound effects. So they're not synced together. It had to play at the same time. Then I have to cue for the banner to start rising, so that once all three Stanley Cups hit, you start to see Stanley Cup champions rising out of the box. Then lighting has their own cue as well. So there's like all these different elements all happening at the same time, and it's a full team effort for that one specific moment. I just thought it was so special. I think it's insane.
Now, I'm pretty lucky.
How nervous were you in that moment? How nervous were you in that moment?
Oh God, yeah, I was very nervous, but I had a lot of trust in everyone and everyone in the team. I wasn't nervous that we would mess up or that something would work. Because here's the thing, like, if I got nervous or scared that something was going to mess up all the time, I'd be a wreck. Like, we rehearsed. Did it work in rehearsal? Okay, cool. I'm going to not worry about anything messing up unless I need to. So I kind of had to just take a deep breath and let it go. And, yeah, it worked out. The one thing that did make me kind of nervous was the last time we ran through bringing the box on and off the ice, one of the ball bearings and the wheels of the banner box like popped out. And so we started thinking like, oh, we can't rehearse anymore, because if it keeps going, there's a ledge right there on the ice. There's a lip by the Zamboni door. And if it keeps going on and off and the wheel pops off, and now it's a whole thing. So we rehearsed it that last time and go, okay, we only need it to work once. That's all we need. Just work one time. And we got away with it. But once it came out on the ice, I felt a lot better. So
now, Tyler, yeah. I've been in a couple of different arenas. Like, I mean, me and Ryan have seen games in a bunch of different rinks, but what you guys do and what you guys did is pretty special, because there's not a lot of teams around the league that have the type of production and the type of in-game experience that you guys do. Like, I went to New Jersey this year, and it was kind of disappointing, because it's like there really wasn't any in-game entertainment. I mean, Anaheim had a little bit, but the team's so bad that there's no one in the rink to support it. But how big of an advantage is it for you to be in a city like Las Vegas that has this huge stage presence? I mean, every big casino has a show. So, like, do you recruit people from those shows to come work for you, or do they want to come work for you? Like, how much of an advantage is it, say, being in Las Vegas as opposed to, like, I don't want to pick on Columbus, but say Columbus?
Yeah. No, it's a massive, massive advantage, but it's also a lot of weight on our shoulders. You know, we know that anytime anyone walks into the Fortress, they also have the opportunity and the chance to go to 100 other shows within a 4-mile stretch of road. And they picked our show. So we have to honor that. We have to respect it. And it's something that we've said since day one. That's super, super important to us. And, you know, that's kind of why this banner raising was such a huge moment for us. It was kind of our way. We told a story and we're giving it back to the fans and the city. And we're incredibly lucky. Like you said, it's a massive advantage. We've worked with some phenomenal people. We've worked with Cirque du Soleil before. And we have phenomenal people here that know projection mapping and stuff really well. And they've kind of helped us out. But, you know, everyone on our squad kind of came from somewhere else. Which is really cool. Like, our team was kind of assembled, our entertainment team was assembled kind of like the team on the ice. You know, it was just a bunch of random people from random spots in the country all kind of came together and to live in Las Vegas and try to put on a great show. And that's kind of the philosophy we still live by to this day.
All right, Tyler. So another show that you helped kind of create and was a lot of fun. It happened a year ago today, and that was the parade. And the rally after the parade, all of that. So I want you to reflect on the parade, the rally, what that experience meant to you, what it was like for you, and maybe share a memory or two from that day a year ago.
Oh, boy. There's a lot of memories, tell you that much. Yeah, it's crazy that was a year ago today. I posted on my Instagram today, like, 1 year ago today, and I'm walking along the buses and everything. And I think the parade was just – I've never experienced something like that. I've been a fan of teams that have won championships before, and but this one was obviously I'm on this side of it, and it was just so incredible. I was able to kind of walk along the buses, check in on our cast at the front and everything like that. But I had my wife with me, and so I have video of my wife running along the fans, giving them all high fives, and these fans have no idea who she is. They probably think she might be a player wife or something. I don't know. But she's running, giving it was just the most happy, like, experience ever. And then going up onto the stage, I was able to help coordinate that, work that with Emma, our phenomenal manager of entertainment experience. And here's a good story. We had a whole script laid out. We had, you know, this is going to happen, and then Mark Chinook's going to introduce this person, and then they're going to introduce Bill Foley, and then we're going to introduce the team, and then this. So I'm kind of walking everyone through that backstage just as a reminder, and as I'm walking through it, Bill Foley walks out onto the stage with, like, no one introducing him, and I hear the crowd explode in roars, and I go, is that Bill Foley on stage? And I look around, and I go, I look at my script, and I go, all right, I'm just going to throw this to the side. Let's wing it. And so that whole stage production was me and Emma just trying to figure out the best way to go and updating people on the fly. And what's cool about it is, like, that's part of a Stanley Cup championship parade is you can have a script, but at the end of the day, like, these guys want to party. They want to hoist that cup. They want to enjoy it with the fans. So give them the moment, give them the time. And it was insane. That was quite the party.
I'm guessing you and your team were probably the only sober people around Toshiba Plaza on that particular Saturday evening.
I will keep my lips closed on that.
I feel like maybe you had to be, but you know, the last time we had you on, we talked a little bit about how you like to throw little Easter eggs into the show and like. One of the big things for you is throwing little Star Wars Easter eggs in there. But correct me if I'm wrong, but there were no Star Wars Easter eggs in the Stanley Cup celebration at all, were there?
No, it wasn't about Star Wars that night.
Nothing to slip in.
Yeah, the Stanley Cup celebration was for the team, it was for the city. The banner raising, there was no Easter egg in there either. That was for the teams, for the city. You know, we like to put little Easter eggs in it for us, a bunch of Star Wars nerds on our team. And that just kind of keeps it fun and keeps our brain racked by, like, ooh, how can we kind of sneak a little something in for one of our opens? But, you know, this is such a massive ordeal. Like, we didn't need to spice it up any more. We didn't need to add little Easter eggs. We were just like, let's put on a great, great show. And that's what we hope we did.
If you could have put something in, what would you have slipped in?
Ooh, jeez, I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I haven't even thought about it. Probably something like the music at the end of Return of the Jedi after they defeat the Empire, and it shows Luke and he dances with the Ewoks, and he's like, that's such a good song.
Wait, the Ewok song or the one that they put out in the digitally remastered one?
Oh, no, the original.
Okay,
original.
All right, yeah, because the new one like sucks because they took the Ewok song out.
I know. No, we're all original.
Okay, so, like, I'm a fan of the Star Wars Easter eggs. I feel like Chris is right. Like, when we had you on, we were going to dive into it a little bit more. We didn't really get too far down the rabbit hole. I was a big fan of the Obi-Wan Kenobi throwing the stones. That was fun. Like, do you have a favorite Star Wars Easter egg that you've placed in? Like, I know we talked, I think, the last time about unlimited power in the Stanley Cup final, but maybe one that you loved because it was unique or no one's been able to get it. Like, what's your favorite Star Wars Easter egg to this point with this production?
Oh, boy. The unlimited power in the Stanley Cup final, like, that started as a joke. Mm-hmm. And you were like, no, screw it. Put it in there. And we got away with the fact. We got away with it. And, like, people, like, reacted to it. Like, it was so close to being too cheesy. But I think it was awesome. So I loved that one. That's definitely my favorite one. Just because, also, too, like, that's the biggest open we'll ever do. Like, the Stanley Cup final is, like, that's nuts. The fact we snuck one in there is hysterical to me. But beyond that, I think all the other ones that we've really kind of done have kind of been really subtle, like maybe a sound effect of like Boba Fett, you know, ion bomb exploding. We snuck that in there a couple times. We kind of stay away from like music because we don't want to get Disney on us. But yeah, sure. we've done one before too, where like the Golden Knight uses the Force to grab the sword. That was like the first major one that we did. That was a fun one. But the Unlimited Power is, without a doubt, my favorite.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I think for the moment, right, like for the series, where you were at, all of that, it's the big bad, it's Palpatine, can you solve it? I think it worked on a lot of different levels. Now, yeah. I want to shift gears here and talk about the summer, because, I mean, obviously, like, you know, a lot of us in a couple of weeks, once free agency's done, we're not going to think about hockey very much until, you know, early September, middle September, somewhere in there. But as a creative, as somebody that is tasked, obviously, with trying to create that entertainment experience prior to the games, like, what does your summer look like in terms of trying to come up with a game plan for next season?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're taking this summer, we're taking it kind of easy, but we are already hard at work at what we want to do next season. You know, while we don't have any hockey going on, we want to take advantage of that because we did not get to take advantage of it last summer, last season. Because, you know, the parade was today, a year ago, but then after that, the Cup travels and our editors and videographers go with them, so we can't really do any other video shoots, or, you know, we don't have enough time to make other graphics and all this kind of stuff because we're so busy doing all this other Cup stuff. So we're taking advantage of the time we have now. We have a weekly meeting at 2 o'clock on Tuesday that we call Tuesdays at 2. And our group gets together, whoever's available, whoever's in the office, we get together and we have a running Excel spreadsheet that our director of production put together, Patrick. And it's kind of, here's a bunch of ideas. Let's go through these ideas. Let's catch updates on these graphics. And see where we can improve. It's called the 1% document. And it's all about just like, you know, let's add this one idea. It'll make the show 1% better. But if we get 100 of these ideas and each idea makes the show 100% 1% better, the show is now 100% better with all these. That's kind of the philosophy behind it, which is really awesome. So we already have, I think, three or four new noise prompts already that no one's seen that'll debut next season that we're super excited about. We've already kind of started talking like open and what we want the vibe to look like. And, it's kind of like a fresh coat of paint because last season was so much about the banner and defending champions, all this stuff. Well, unfortunately we're not defending champions, but it does allow us to kind of reset, put a fresh coat of paint on everything. Let's look at telling a different kind of story now, cause we don't have to worry about defending. We're attacking again. We're trying to get it back. So we could tell that story. And that's kind of what our summer's looking like. And we're really, you know, I don't want to say enjoying the time that we have because we'd rather be, you know, having another parade today. But it has been kind of nice to take a deep breath, refresh, and get cranking on some cool new stuff.
Now, a couple different things I'd like to ask you, but we're up against it. So there's really only one thing I can ask you. But when you hear stuff from other arenas, like, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I've been in other arenas, and there's sometimes where you maybe are watching a game and you hear something that you guys do. Like, I was watching a game on television one night, and I heard, and I don't know the guy who does it, but he's like, "Vegas, you ready to get louder?" I heard that same thing at another game, and I'm like, those guys stole that from Vegas. So how flattering is it for you guys when you see something that you've done, I'll say stolen, by another team and them use it in their rink?
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. But and I think like we definitely have seen that a couple times, and I'm sure other teams have seen us take something that maybe they've done. But I think with us, we try and whether we get inspired by everything and everyone. So whether it's a movie, a show, another team, if we see something that a team does that we really like, okay, cool, let's look at utilizing it. But how do we give it the Vegas twist? How do we make it for us? How do we make it about Vegas and the city or the team? Obviously, some other teams maybe don't think that deeply about it, and they'll see something that we do. They see that it works, and they're just like, oh, I want to take that. We're going to do that. Okay, that's fine. But what's cool about that is that it forces us now to change it up. So if we see one team take something that we do, well, now we're going to change it up and do something a little bit better that you can't copy. So one of the things I know is, you know, we have our Nightline or LED drummers by Drumbots, and they came out, and then over the years, we've seen a couple other teams start to kind of bring out some LED drummers and some other stuff, and so then we go, okay, well, let's change up our drummers. Let's present them in a different way. Let's put a different costume on them. Let's descend them from the ceiling. Good luck copying that. And then if another team does copy that, it just forces us to go, okay, we're going to one-up you trying to copy us. And so it's just, it's a constant ebbs and flow of creativity. And I love it. It's fine. I don't care. If it works for their city, if it works for their team and the crowd gets engaged, that's all we're trying to do.
Yeah, Tyler, this has been fantastic. We appreciate you taking the time. If you can slide in like an Indiana Jones Easter egg, that'd be really cool. But that's just a personal ask, I guess, from me. Congratulations on all the success.
You.
Congratulations on the Emmy. Your group does a phenomenal job night in, night out. Everything, it's always fresh. It's always entertaining. It grabs you even before you get to watch the hockey, which is, I think, ultimately the goal. And you guys do a great job as obviously you just won an Emmy. Like, that's freaking awesome. So congratulations on that. Enjoy your summer, and hopefully we can get you on as we get closer to the next season.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on. Appreciate it.
That is Tyler Ferraro, the Director of Entertainment Experience for the Vegas Golden Knights. And if you are just joining us, the Vegas Golden Knights won an Emmy for Special Events Program last night, honoring their coverage of the team's 2023 Stanley Cup Championship banner-raising ceremony. It was a great night for the Golden Knights, champions on the ice, and now winners of incredibly prestigious awards, the Emmys, off the ice. So great stuff there from Tyler. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you to Nate Ewell for making sure that that could happen. And we'll take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner. Centered one-timer score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. The Columbus Blue Jackets have fired head coach Pascal Vincent after one season behind the bench of the Columbus Blue Jackets. We all remember Pascal Vincent was named coach after Mike Babcock resigned, before ever coaching a game for the Jackets. That's right. Mike Babcock was selected and hired as the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was supposed to be the guy behind the bench for the 2023-24 season and beyond. However, there was some interesting conduct over the course of the summer, and before you even get to training camp, Mike Babcock resigns. So you go to Pascal Vincent. It's a really tough spot. Like, you're an assistant in that scenario, asked to do something really difficult. It wasn't a great year, obviously, for the Columbus Blue Jackets. We talked about Patrick Laine a couple of days ago on the show. Like, he had some injury issues in the player assistance program. And when you boil it down, it will now be four coaches in three seasons for Columbus. It'll be whoever they end up hiring. Pascal Vincent, Mike Babcock for a minute, but it still counts, and Brad Larson. So for Johnny Gaudreau, think about it from this perspective. Johnny Gaudreau decides in free agency to go to Columbus. This will be the third coach that he's had in two seasons. Well, fourth, I guess, when you consider Mike Babcock, but I'm not really going to consider that. Here's my ultimate take on this. There has been a lot of dysfunction with Columbus as an organization over the last couple of seasons. See Mike Babcock, but also the decision from Jarmo Kekalainen to go with Mike Babcock in that spot when there were question marks surrounding Mike and if he had changed to get a head coaching job in the National Hockey League in 2023-24. I think you need a clean break from the old regime. Kekalainen's out. Don Waddell is in. Don Waddell knows what he's doing, as evidenced by what you saw out of the Carolina Hurricanes for years and years and years. I think you need a clean break from everything that was associated with the old regime. And unfortunately for Pat Vincent, that means he's out. It was a tough scenario. It was a lose-lose situation for him, truly. I feel badly for him, but this makes a lot of sense from the Blue Jackets, organizationally speaking, because you need to start fresh. You need a new pair of eyes, not just in Don Waddell at the management level, but behind the bench as well.
Yeah, it seems like the guy who's kind of getting a pass in all of this is John Davidson. Like, why are we... I mean, not us, but, like, you have to wonder why the media in Columbus is not asking questions there. Like, why... You know, it just seems like since he's taken over as the senior advisor, there's been nothing but dysfunction with the Columbus Blue Jackets. It seems like a lifetime ago that this franchise swept the President's Trophy winning Tampa Bay Lightning out of the playoffs and then took them to, what, a 5-overtime game in the bubble? Like, it just seems like that was so long ago in this franchise's history. It's been a tumultuous ride downhill for them since then. I feel bad for the fans there because they deserve better. You know, they come into the league, they stunk forever. They finally get good, and you had a bunch of guys who couldn't wait to get out of town. And now it's a struggle again. You get this high, big-time free agent in Johnny Gaudreau. You trade for Patrick Laine, and you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe things are looking up. And it seems like that hasn't done anything. This team and organization seem like they are so far away from competing, not for a Stanley Cup, but for a playoff spot, that I just feel bad for the fans in Columbus because I think they deserve better than what they've gotten the last 2 or 3 years.
And as much as this sucks for Pascal Vincent, I think that that's ultimately the goal here. I think you bring in Don Waddell because you want to change the culture from that point of view. And I would expect that Waddell is going to bring in a coach that he believes can change the culture with the team and push them in the right direction, which is why I think you need a clean break from everything that's old and really dive into what's new. Hit the reset button and move forward if you're Columbus. Guy Boucher out as assistant coach in Toronto. Guy Boucher famously ran the power play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is really funny when you consider, like, as a head coach, Guy Boucher's claim to fame is the 1-3-1 and defensive responsibility, but I digress. In the regular season, Boucher had that power play absolutely clicking. They were the 7th best in the league, so good on him there. However, in the playoffs, they scored just one power play goal on 21 attempts. For a team as talented as the Toronto Maple Leafs and with the margins as small and as slim as they are to win in the postseason, if you have a great power play in the regular season, it has to continue to be a great power play in the postseason. This isn't terribly surprising to me. The Leafs don't get it done when it matters the most. They move on from Sheldon Keefe. They're moving on from Guy Boucher. It just makes sense. It's the right decision here.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. I mean, two things can be true at the same time. You know, Guy Boucher seems like the fall guy, but you also change coaches. You bring in Craig Berube. He's going to want his own guys in there. So,
yeah.
Yep. Guy Boucher, the fall guy, but you look at it from the perspective of, well, yeah, they fired Sheldon Keefe and brought in Craig Berube. So, of course, they're going to make changes at the other coaching positions as well. I wouldn't be surprised if there's other changes there on the staff as well. I don't know who was fired and who stuck around when Keefe was let go. That's one of those things that's always kind of surprised me about the NHL. Like when a coach gets fired, the staff sometimes doesn't always get fired with that coach. Like sometimes it's always mm-hmm. like when Pete DeBoer was fired, we know who went with him. You know, when Gerard Gallant was fired, Mike Kelly was fired with him. So they kept a couple of other guys on the staff. So like it's one of those where you have to kind of look and see who stuck around. But when you hire a coach like Craig Berube, listen, I think Craig Berube was the best guy they could have hired for the job. So
yeah,
let him bring in his own guys. Let him run the show. And it's not surprising. It sucks for Guy Boucher, but I'm guessing he probably had already started sending the resume out because I'm thinking the writing was probably on the wall there early when Sheldon Keefe got fired.
Well, I'm assuming that like if Guy Boucher wasn't considered as a replacement for Sheldon Keefe, that he probably was done for, and that's the reality of the situation.
And he'll land on his feet. You know, he'll find a job somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of the Leafs, what are your expectations when it comes to Mitch Marner? Right, because we recognize that Toronto wants to make a change in terms of how their team is structured. You're not moving Auston Matthews. You're not moving William Nylander. It's going to be nearly impossible to move the final year of John Tavares' contract. So you've got Mitch Marner entering the prime of his career, coming off of a really good regular season, without a contract beyond this year. And a no-movement clause that kicked in and screws up the Leafs' ability to trade him without Mitch having the final say. So, like, what do you expect? Like, for an organization that's touting change, do you believe that there's going to be any significant change in Toronto?
I don't. You know, it's the fact that they didn't trade him before the no-movement clause went into effect made me think that they believe that they're going to be able to re-sign him. I don't know how. I don't know.
Well, hold on. It's a matter of do they want to? Is where you're at with Mitch Marner.
I don't think they want to lose him for nothing. But it seems
I think they want to trade Mitch Marner. I don't think the appetite's there for Toronto to re-sign him. Like maybe if you have to, sure. But like if I were doing it, and Mitch wants a contract, I'll sign him to a contract, but there's no trade protection in it.
I think that's the way you're approaching it, yeah, that's the way it has to be done. Like, look, dude, we'll give you the contract, but we're going to take out this no movement clause. Like, we're going to have the ability to trade
now,
you.
Now, it doesn't help you this year to get out from under it, but like if I'm the Leafs, I go to Mitch Marner and I'm like, listen, if you're not in our long-term plans, we're not re-signing you. And there's an opportunity that you go out this year and you're not on the first power play unit. Your usage is going to be different under Coach Craig Berube. We don't know what your numbers are going to look like. So you're in a contract year, right? You're in a contract year and you are not going to be a Leaf beyond this season. So you can either consent to being traded so that you can go to a place that makes a lot of sense for you, that wants to sign you long term to max everything, or you can bet on yourself that you're going to be as productive as you are and you're not going to lose money when you go to free agency. Like, you have to make a decision on Mitch Marner, whether or not you want him in the organization or not. If you want him in the organization, re-sign him, end the silliness, so that we can all get back to our lives expecting what we expect out of Toronto, and that's that no change is actually going to come. But if you do want to change something, you got to start to strong arm him into being open to the idea of picking his destination and getting out of town.
Well, that's it. And you have to think that there would certainly be an appetite from a lot of places for a player the caliber of Mitch Marner.
Sure.
I mean, 85 points in only 69 games last year. You have to imagine if he plays a full 82 games, he probably reaches the century mark. He's
a 100-point player.
Yeah, he's only 27. So, yeah. I mean, I think every team in the league would love to have a guy like that on their roster. The question is, if you're Mitch Marner, where do you want to go? Because it seems like that's he's going to have a big say in where he ends up. Like, it's not the situation where, hey, guess what, guy? We're going to trade you to a team that you don't want to go to because you don't have any type of protection. No, he's got all the protection in the world to basically dictate where he ends up, where he signs his, or where, maybe not signs his next contract, but where he plays in his next contract.
Here's the thing with Marner. You're absolutely right. Either the Leafs want him or they don't. And if they don't, he decides where he goes. There's no other domino to fall. The trade is likely going to be lost by Toronto because Mitch will determine his own fate as to where he goes. So you're in a lose-lose situation, but if you don't believe the way forward is with Mitch, you've got to make a change sooner rather than later. If he's on the roster in September, October, they're never going to change. And they need to because they're not going to win. They're not going to win as currently constructed. And like, yes, Tavares comes off the books after next season, but then you've got your core three that's never done anything in the playoffs. You think that's going to be the solution for you? I don't.
Yeah.
It's something really interesting to keep an eye on, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, I don't know what they're going to do. We'll see as that unfolds, but you have to make a decision on Marner, and you got to lean one way or another, and you got to hope that it's the right decision. That's all I've got there. Those are your one-timers for today, Monday, June 17th. Catching up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. Well, we were talking in the second segment of the show about, like, concerts and stuff, and Wes texted in on the text line that he saw Rob Zombie Halloween Eve at the Hard Rock. He said it was wild. Now, like, I'm guessing, like, there are certain shows that would just be pretty awesome to see. And Rob Zombie, like, anywhere around Halloween seems like the type of show that would just be phenomenal. Like, I mean, the guy's like the Living Dead guy, right? Like, I mean, that's his whole shtick, and it was cool. Like, I mean, I would love to have seen that. Like, if Rob Zombie comes to town and plays, like, Halloween or Halloween Eve, I feel like I have to go to something like that. Like, it's just one of those shows where it just fits. Like, you go see Mannheim Steamroller at Christmas or the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Mm-hmm. Rob Zombie at Halloween. Mm-hmm. That's one that's got to be an epic show.
Yeah, Rob Zombie Halloween, the Misfits during Halloween, but they generally play New Jersey. They don't venture out here. But, yeah, I'm with you. That would be a fun one. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Game 5 Stanley Cup Final. Will the Florida Panthers do it? We'll see.